They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 59 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's been taking photos of ourselves and accidentally posting them on Twitter. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVeigh. Whoops, caught.
In this issue, it's a tale of two Quicksilvers, trailers for two new DC creations, and all the latest headlines, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Snapshot by Andy Diggle and Jock. This is Behind the Panels.
How urban we're getting.
That is, of course, the Beastie Boys with Sure Shot, the closest thing entitled to Snapshot that I could find on short notice.
And I will apologize in advance for the one F-bomb that was in there.
Yes.
Well, actually, I apologize in post.
Forgotten that there was an F-bomb in there.
But it was so quick, we're going to leave it alone.
In fact, I didn't even notice it was there. Of course, it is a tribute, of course, in a little way, because I haven't played any Beastie Boys on the show before since the late, great MCA passed away last year.
That's true.
And look, you know, Beastie Boys will always be the greatest hip-hop band in the world ever, for any reason.
And if you disagree with them, it's feedback about thebattles.net.
Oh, I don't care. I've seen them twice live and I love them.
No, I like the Beastie Boys. They're cool.
Now, David, exchange some pleasantries and chit-chat with me. That's what the show notes say.
Actually, look, this is completely uncomic book related, but can we just talk about the fact that we've been, I think all of us at some point or another, have been watching the new Blu-rays of Star Trek, the original series, and God, they look good. Everybody go out and buy this right now.
Yeah, look, whether it's the original series, whether it's the Next Generation, whether it's Enterprise, they all look bloody amazing on Blu-ray.
It's just sensational, because they're all shot on 35mm film to start with, so they have original, amazing originals to go back to.
Yeah.
I cannot wait till the 1966 Batman comes out.
How good
is that going to look from its original next?
Oh, I'm already...
I'm entering Batman.
Shall we go into the men's locker room?
That's how excited I am.
That's how excited we are. So all these old classic TV shows in particular are getting this this Blu-ray treatment. And my God, I want to see them all. I even want to see the Saturday morning old Shazam series.
Put
on the Blu-ray. These are all shot on 35mm in those days. So let's do it. Let's get them all.
Well, while we're going back, let's just try and go back there now.
Why not?
And let's hit up the Wayback Machine and head right back to the 1950s.
Glad you stopped by for breakfast, Jimmy. Oh, excuse me a moment, will you? Hey, Mr. Kent, you're out of Kellogg's cornflakes.
Look at the cover. There's a spare package.
You mean there was a spare package?
Well, how about running down the store and picking up another one?
Jeepers, we gotta get to the office. There's no time. Who do you think I am, Superman?
No, I don't think that.
Out of Kellogg's cornflakes. Fine host he is.
Even if Superman did deliver Kellogg's cornflakes, he'd have a tough time keeping everybody happy. More people run out of them every morning than any other cereal. Because Kellogg's cornflakes taste best to more people. Always have, still do. Don't run out at your house. Remember, any time you buy cereal of any kind, pick up a spare package of Kellogg's cornflakes.
Just make sure you buy our stuff.
David, I wasn't quite clear on what they were selling.
I just have one quick question, though, which is, was there anything they wouldn't whore themselves out to?
There was another one. There's a sugar snack one. There's a whole stack, and there was another one with Perry White. I want to know why Jimmy was popping around in the morning for breakfast at Clark's place anyway.
Was he popping around the morning, oh, or was he just waking up?
Yeah. Oh, Jimmy, you're here.
Still here.
There's cameras. Just play along. Yeah, look, that was from the 1950s. That was, of course, George Reeves.
I love that series. That's another one I want to see on Blu-ray.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing, actually. When they released the Blu-ray ones, when they had the bonus, do they have it there as a bonus thing, any of those ones? No, that was only in the DVD box set, wasn't it?
It was the DVDs. I don't think they've gone
Blu-ray. No. That's right, because they put those bonus episodes like Superman and the Mole Men and things like that. But that was only in the DVD set, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I don't think there's been a high-def release of any of those. I mean, why aren't we seeing high-def releases of the Wonder Woman series, Linda Carter series? I want to see this stuff.
So let's face it, Warner and Blu-ray are kind of synonymous. So...
By the way, for those who are into old superhero TV shows, Warner Collection, you know that one where they make them to order?
Yes, yes.
They now have the Shazam series.
Oh, wonderful.
And that pilot with Kathy Lee Crosby. For
Wonder Woman. The Wonder Woman one, yes.
Yes, okay, so they're now actually on that Warner Brother collection, so you can order them to buy.
I think you can also get, we played the clip a very, very long time ago, that... Justice League thing that was the
yes, you can buy that. Yes,
the
yes,
roast,
yes. Oh,
the roast.
Yeah, what's that called again? Legend of the Superheroes.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes, you can buy that. Both episodes together on one disc.
That would be fantastic. But to catch up on what we haven't been watching, but rather than what we've been reading, I'm going to hit a button and see what happens.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
The button worked. I think, Richard, this entire conversation is going to be dominated by one title.
Well, yeah, we mentioned it last week's show, but the biggest release of last week, at least for us, was Green Lantern number 20.
Absolutely.
And it was a special anniversary issue and a deluxe printing and all that sort of thing. A new reader would have been completely confused as to why this was an important issue. Why it was an important issue was because it was the last issue that was written by Geoff Johns.
Who has been consistently writing Lantern now for 10 years, I think it is?
Just shy of 10 years.
Just shy of 10 years, yeah.
So he the thing that he does in this book is he not only demonstrates why he's been so influential on this show,
I wish he was influential on this show.
Well, he is influential on this show. He's written a lot of the books that we've read. But, he's been influential on that title for so long and because of all the elements that he's introduced and because he wraps them all up. And the other thing that he's done is ensure that his hand is going to be on whatever Green Lantern title comes out for the next 10 years.
Yeah, we were talking about this before the show. I mean... Green Lantern was one that we talked about this last week, it was one I came to late, and I only came to it because I was reading those Green Arrow comics with the Forest, and it made me want to go back and find out what the hell was going on. And then there was also a Green Lantern movie coming out, which, as it turns out, that wasn't such a good thing, but it made me want to go and catch up on the lore.
Yeah.
And so I went back to basically the beginning of Geoff Johns' run and kind of read through from there. And it was just, for me, and I still think that Marvel Cosmic is probably where I'm at, but for me, that is as important and as career-defining as the Marvel Cosmic Universe.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he created a mythology for the space-bound universe of DC and just basically just pulled this whole thing together.
And so strong was his mythology that when DC rebooted their entire universe for the New 52... He has remained untouched. Completely
absolutely.
Untouched.
Absolutely. It was like the New 52 didn't actually happen around him.
The only thing that kind of made me a little bit sad in that final issue was that because the New 52 has happened, and there's that beautiful montage to do with his entire adventures from when he found the ring through to the end, they don't mention his adventures with Ollie,
Green
Arrow,
yeah.
Which was a huge part of Green Lantern history. Whether you're a Green Lantern or a Green Arrow fan, it's a massive similar issue. And they couldn't mention it because that Green Arrow doesn't exist in that world. So unfortunately, that's probably the only quibble I have in an otherwise flawless issue. And that's not Geoff Johns' fault. what he does by the end of this issue is also gives a, like a little epilogue to what happens to all the characters next, right up to the deaths of some of them.
And I think it's fair to say what I said to you this afternoon when we were talking about this, when I said it's almost, and I won't use the language I used this afternoon, but it's almost like it's a huge up yours from Geoff Johns to anybody who wants to take over Green Lantern at this point. Because he's basically not only wrapped up every story thread, but then, as you were saying, with this little epilogue at the end, he then basically says, this is everything that's going to happen.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> So he's been on, his hand has touched everything in the last 10 years of Green Lantern, and it'll touch the next 10 years. I've actually been there from the start, because I was reading Green Lantern back in the 90s following the death of Superman.
Right.
And it picked up in the whole Coast City destruction thing where Hal Jordan went a bit mad. And when Parallax and all that sort of stuff, and Kyle Rayner took over for a while, and followed that story through. And then I fell out of comics for a few years and came back, and it was around the time Kyle Rayner was just phasing out and Hal Jordan was coming back. And I've got those first issues of Rebirth and the miniseries and the Green Lantern series that followed it. And so I was instantly hooked back in at that stage. And then I took another break from comics, but that was one title that I went back and caught up with.
And what's really amazing about the way that Geoff Johns has handled it is, because when I went back to actually catch up on it as well, like you, I came in at Rebirth, and yet so much has happened within the Green Lantern world, including the whole Coast City thing and all the rings and him killing off the rest of the Lantern Corps and the whole, I mean, all this stuff had happened, and yet never did I feel lost.
No, look, the thing is, even if you just read that final issue by itself, and I'd read this series, I'd read all other 19 issues and the specials
from
that series, the Zero issue and the annual, which all magnificent. We've had just in those last 20 issues, we've had the introduction of Buzz and all those sorts of people, Simon Buzz. Who is going to be the next Green Lantern at this point? But now,
Hal Jordan's back.
Hal Jordan's back effectively, but he seems to be. I think he's going to be in charge of the Corps, basically. So we'll see what happens after that. But look, you know, I think we can safely say that we'll be reading the next Green Lantern issue to see what happens next. But big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm just going to say that I don't know if
Robert Venditti. Yeah,
I don't know if 21's going to hold up.
No, but look, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah,
he's got the most solid.
We salute you, sir, as you go into battle on this one.
Exactly. he's got the most solid foundation underneath him. So. You know,
one of the most rabid core set of fans ever. So
before I just quickly mention one other book, I always remember something Brian Michael Bendis said about Ultimate Spider-Man when he'd been on that for years and years and years and years. He said, when I leave this book, I'm going to chop the arms and legs off Peter Parker and say to the next writer there, you deal with it. So I always love that. the other green book that came out last week was The Green Team, Teen Trillionaires.
Which I haven't had a chance to read yet. I want you to tell me about it, please.
Now, it's interesting because it's kind of the companion book to The Movement, which was DC's 99% book, and this is their 1% book. Actually, there's two books that came out last week, and I'll just mention them in the same breath, because there was The Green Team, Teen Trillionaires, which talked about the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically a group of rich kids who are inventing things, and one of them wants to be a superhero, and they've got some technology that'll help them do that, and there's rival companies, and there's all this sorts of stuff happening, people trying to get their corporate secrets. But it's like the first issue didn't capture me entirely, but it's still much better than The Movement, because I found it an interesting thing. I didn't realize it's based on an old DC book from the 70s called The Green Team Boy Millionaires.
Oh, really?
Okay. Which was a very short-lived series that came out in 75. I didn't realize that was created by Joe Simon, and I didn't realize that it was a thing until I was doing a bit of reading about this book and came back to it. But it's not a bad book. I have to salute DC for actually trying something different. That said, I don't think it's going to last a year.
Like a lot of the stuff from the New 52.
You know, and I really do. I am glad to see non-established heroes turning up in the New 52, because I think that's what they should be doing now. So that we've got our core books. Let's make those strong and try a few different things. If they don't work, they don't work. But this is an attempt to do that. So you have to salute DC on some level for doing that. But I think it's kind of a stab in the dark. I don't think this will catch on, because the first issue didn't grab me. It's better than The Movement. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. But it just didn't do a huge amount for me. But the other book that came out on a similar theme was Occupy Comics, indie Kickstarter comic. It's got names behind it.
I'm really intrigued by this.
Well, I mean, you know, it's got contributions by Alan Moore and David Lloyd, mm-hmm. who did V for Vendetta. It's got a lot of great people in there. Ben Temple Smith's one of the people in there. All sorts of big names, and it really is actually about the 99% versus the 1%. It is all the proceeds of that book, not all the monies, not just the profits, all the monies sold from that book go to helping the Occupy movement. So
interesting. Okay.
So
everybody's working for free.
Pretty much, yeah.
Interesting, okay.
So it's a magnificently produced book, looks great, all the pieces. Even Art Spiegelman's got a one-pager in there.
I'm definitely going to have to read this.
So definitely have a look at that. I can't recommend it enough. And if it's a cause you believe in, then definitely spend some money on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that came out last week. So I think it's interesting that that's DC's corporate take, and then there's the indie version of it, which is, you know, so how many all those creators working, giving their time.
You've got to ask yourself how... And this is going to sound really cynical, but how political can DC really get about this?
Yeah, when they are...
When they are the man?
They are the man. It was like when The Lorax came out.
Yeah.
And it was released by Universal, and it had a really, really big environmental message. It was released by Universal, who's owned by General Electric.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to wonder about
this. You kind of fall back on that whole background and go, yeah, you know, I don't want to be a cynic, but... There are times where things don't quite sit comfortably.
No. Look, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. I think when the corporate tries to latch on to these ideas that, like the Occupy movement, you get things like the movement and Green Team, which to some extent are cynical attempts to
commercialize yeah.
a popular movement. So,
yeah, exactly. And that's the problem, is they're commercializing it. So yeah. I don't know. I think in this particular case, Occupy Comics probably has the upper hand.
I'm going to mention, because I don't want to get into them, because all the reviews you can find on behindthepanels.net under reviews section at the top of the page. Just two other books that came out last week that magnificent, also another ending of sorts, was Daredevil number 26, which was big bad revealed, and it was fantastic. Definitely read that if you haven't checked it out yet. And the other book that came out last week was The Bounce, which is written by Joe Casey. Another interesting take on superheroes. It opens with our hero basically taking a hit from a massive bong and ends with him inhaling another person who's all made up of mist and going into a future world that's run by...
Awesome.
Where superheroes are really common. So it's the same writer as Sex. Right. So,
which, should we also point out that Sex issue 3 came out as well, which
and
is
it's still going very strong.
Fantastic yeah. book. Fantastic book.
Definitely read all those books. As I said, for all the latest reviews, hit up behindthepanels.net and hit reviews. And you can also find us on comicbookroundup.com, where you can compare critics from all over the web and see what they have to say.
Absolutely.
For now, I think it's time that we head into the news.
What a scoop!
Fox announced that Evan Peters will play Quicksilver in X-Men Days of Future Past. The character is also set to appear in Joss Whedon's The Avengers sequel, It's a Race.
Blue is the Warmest Color has taken out the top slot at the Cannes Film Festival. It was based on the French graphic novel by Julie Moreau and is expected to be published in English later this year under the title Blue Angel, although I expect it to be changed back to Blue is the Warmest Color by the time it's published.
A full trailer for the video game Young Justice Legacy was released this week. Set between the two seasons of the animated series, it sounds a little something like this.
When the most notorious villains in history join forces to take over the universe.
So glad you decided to play!
Riddler. It will take more than a hero to save the day. It's gonna take 12.
You want a piece? I kind of hoped you'd say something like that.
Now, in an epic race against time, to keep the planet safe from disaster,
we won't let you destroy the world.
Young Justice will face their greatest challenge yet.
Form up.
From the creators of the smash hit Cartoon Network show comes an all-new interactive experience like never before.
Yes!
Ultimate battle against good and evil. One will rise.
Stop!
One will fall. One will die. Young Justice Legacy, the video game, saving the universe this summer.
Before we go on to the next trailer, I should point out that some of those voices you heard might sound very familiar because of the same voices that they had from the TV series, including Lacey Chabert, Alan Tudyk, Kelly Hu, and Danny Trejo plays Bane.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The game looks okay. Finally, another trailer for the next DC animated original movie has been released. It's for Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox, based on the successful Flashpoint event of 2011 that led into the New 52. Have a listen to that one.
World War III. Maybe I could have stopped it if I just ran a little faster. Faster! The Speed Force allows the Reverse Flash to travel through time. He changed something in the past. We have to find out what he changed and change it back before they kill everyone on the planet. In my world, I'm a hero.
You mean like Batman?
No matter how fast you run, you can't save everyone.
We're running out of time.
War's over. Everybody lost.
No!
You'd be amazed the monsters this world can create.
My God, I hope they stick close to the original comic book because they got potential here.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a magnificent series. And I mean, the mini series is way better than anything that's followed.
Yes.
with the exception, as we've just said, of Green Lantern and Scott Snyder's Batman.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and it'd be interesting. And I wonder whether or not then, after they've done the Flashpoint Paradox film, if they'll start making DC original movies based on the New 52 versions of the characters.
Yeah, it's possible. There is also a huge potential here to have an entire string of films based on Flashpoint, because there's all the satellite books.
Yeah, that's true.
So they could have Flashpoint Paradox, Wonder Woman and the Valkyries, so they could actually go basically spin out into any one of those three-issue miniseries.
Or they could put some shorts on the DVD or Blu-ray.
Or that as well. And there's some really good stories in there.
I haven't watched it, but Superman Unbound just came out, so I'll have to... I've got a copy of
it. I have a copy of it. Yeah. I'm going to watch it. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Let's both watch that before next week, and we'll chat about it on the next show. So that was all the latest news. For more latest updates, head to behindthepanels.net and click on news.
Now, can I just point out, just before we leave our news section, because that's the end of it, but just very quickly on one of those past news stories, how cool would it be, and it's not going to happen.
But
cool would it be, can I just jump back here and say, if they could settle on a deal and get the same actor to play Quicksilver in both universes?
Only that I think someone's actually said, no, it's not going to happen, but, you know, never say never. I think it would benefit both companies immensely because we've seen, like, both companies know how big superhero movies are now.
Well, in particular, the Avengers and Iron Man 3.
The thing is, no matter how big Fox or Sony get box office for any of their movies, I don't think anything's going to be as big as the Avengers films. The Avengers films, are we carrying anything else?
And the Iron Man films. So, Iron Man 3 is a $1 billion film, too.
Fox needs those characters more than Disney and Marvel do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they do it. Obviously, I don't know if I think it's a bit of tit-for-tat corporate competition at the moment.
Well, they're already... I mean, let's face it, Marvel is basically licensing back a character that they licensed to Fox in the first place. It's got to be confusing.
It's confusing for audiences, too, particularly if their ultimate goal is to get people to buy comics. But I don't think there is their ultimate goal anymore. Their ultimate goal is to get people to go to see the movie,
to buy the DVD, and then
to buy the toys and to buy all the merchandise that goes along with that. They've created their own, you know, Flashpoint parallel universe with that, I think. You know?
Yeah, the movie universe, I think, is now standalone. I think there's no doubt about that.
It is very much a Marvel Cinematic Universe, and there's a Fox Marvel Cinematic Universe, and, you know, there's a Sony Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think Sony have actually said, we will never, ever, ever, ever give up the rights to Spider-Man. We'll be making Spider-Man films till the end of time, basically.
Oh, that's a bad thing to say. You know, it really is. I mean, that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah, you're only one flop away from...
Yeah, well, as soon as they spend $200 million on a Spider-Man film that turns about $3 at the box office...
I don't think it's going to happen. I think Spidey will always turn a profit, but...
You make a bad enough film, you know. Let's face it, up until Gigli, Ben Affleck had been in successful films. So had, what's her name? I forget.
Oh, Jennifer Lopez.
And Martin Brest had directed Beverly Hills Cop. Mm. You know? It's like Gigli died.
Yeah, it's true. These things happen. You know,
anything is possible.
Well, now, David, we've gone through what we've been reading. We've gone through the news. Usually around this time of the week, we start talking about our pick of the week. And I'm not going to break with tradition.
Let's do it.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
When slacker comic book store owner Jake finds a seemingly lost smartphone, his life is forever changed. Startled by the photos it contains of a grisly murder scene, he soon finds himself on the run, wrapped up in a conspiracy that involves a reluctant hitman, bullets, bikes, secret facilities, and a trail of corpses behind him. A twisty thriller from the minds of Andy Diggle and Jock, the creative team that brought us The Losers and Green Arrow Year One, this is Snapshot.
And Ratcatcher. Let's not forget Ratcatcher.
Mm.
That mysterious voice at the beginning. Forgot about Ratcatcher.
Well, Ratcatcher. Andy Diggle brought us Ratcatcher, but it was, that mysterious voice was probably referring to the two works that they'd worked on together.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and, fair enough. I give him that. Okay.
And
it's a lovely voice that we have at the beginning.
It is amazing voice, and it sounds a little something like
is
this.
It you.
Last week it sounded incredibly like Stephen Amell.
It did a little bit, yeah.
This snapshot was released as a 4-issue miniseries from Image Comics, which is that they said they always originally intended it to be an Image Comics release, but it actually turned up first because of a deal that they made in the pages of the Judge Dredd magazine as 8 14-page serials, because the two of them used to write for 2000 AD a lot. That's where they got their start.
Is it really... interesting story to be in the Judge Dredd magazine when it doesn't have that tone at all.
That Judge Dredd magazine and 2000 AD, they have put a lot of like little just sort of one-off stories and things. They have these sort of, I think they're called future shocks, I think, in the 2000 AD thing as well. So that there's a tradition of putting these little stories that will go somewhere. The anthology book is a great place where these things turn up. In fact, Dark Horse do it a lot with Dark Horse Presents. They have a whole lot of these things that just turn up in that, and then they release them later as a miniseries or a one-shot or what have you. But apparently it took 5 years to get the book together because of other commitments and projects and things like that as well. So the end product we have is 4-issue miniseries from Image.
And it hasn't been released to trade yet.
Not yet. I don't even know if it's got a release date yet, because it's only just finished this month.
So it's in print. You can get it in 4 issues. It's also on Comixology as the 4 individuals as well. So you can buy it there. That's how I consumed it. You consumed it in print.
I consumed it in print in single issues. I mean, I love Jock's art, so I tend to buy anything that's got his art.
And it is beautifully drawn. It's that stark Jock black and white. Beautiful. I mean, it's just...
And we should say this is black and white. The same way that he did with Ratcatcher, they always intended it to be black and white. It wasn't a decision because it was originally printed in magazine or anything like that. It was printed in black and white deliberately because it gives a very definite tone to it. I'd say the tone is almost Hitchcockian.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's got
it's got that crime noir feel.
It's crime noir meets Hitchcock, because it's kind of got that Wrong Man vibe that a lot of Hitchcock films have. I mean, it's even set in San Francisco, which is, you know, where Vertigo is set, and such an iconic Hitchcock setting.
Young, innocent person who's just trying to get by in life, and he falls into something which he should never have been involved in.
It's actually interesting. I've got a quote here from Andy Diggle about the creative process that went into coming up with the story, and I found it really interesting the way he approached this. He was talking about the writing process, about he was studying screenplay writing and how you should write about what you know and write about what's right in front of you. And he said, "I was reading a screenwriting website that suggested you should be able to come up with a story concept based on anything in your immediate field of vision. My digital camera was on the desk in front of me, so I thought, what if someone lost a camera with pictures of murder victims on it? The story just snowballed from there. The camera quickly morphed into a phone for story reasons, but the framework was there right from the start." So I thought that was really interesting. That was from an interview on Biff Bam Pop. who did an email interview, I think, with Andy Diggle beginning of last year. And I think that's really interesting that that is how Andy Diggle's mind works, that he started with that very simple concept. I've got a camera sitting in front of me. There's pictures of murder victims on it. What if somebody found it? What, and, you know, and then it sort of went from there.
And this is it. It changes to a phone because story plot elements require things like the GPS and stuff that. So,
but I think it's interesting that his thinking was along those lines because the story very much follows that. It's kind of just you sort of once he finds the phone, you just kind of have to go with it because it just barrels along in a momentum. And perhaps that's probably one of the best and worst things about this book is the momentum of it because it goes along so quickly. Sometimes I feel as though it goes over things that I wanted to find out more about while we were there. We're already on to the next thing. But it's still a cracker of a 4-issue series. It'd make a terrific film.
I actually felt all the way through it, though, it actually shouldn't have been released as 4 issues. It should have been released in that lovely format that Ratcatcher was released in.
That Vertigo crime theory.
And then it could have actually had the extra 20 pages that it needed to flesh out, because Ratcatcher was 100 to 120
something
pages.
Something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, you could have given it that extra 20 pages, which wouldn't have been a standalone issue, because it would have just been filler, but you would have actually been able to put that in to its a continuity.
There were characters in there that I thought that I wanted to know a little bit more about. I mean, I think there was the long lost mother character who sort of turns up at one point,
and that's over so quickly.
And I just thought I wanted to know more about her connection to the father, who's now dead, and I want to know stuff about, you know, what's she doing in that. How did she get there? How did and all those sorts of things, you know.
And finally, the opening, the first 2 issues of this are my favorite. Yeah. I think after the first 2 issues, it starts to get a little bit messy. But the first 2 issues, and I could have sat through another 4 issues of the relationship between our comic book shop clerk and that customer, who is terrific.
Let's talk about that. I mean, yeah, unfortunately, spoilers and all, people. Yep, and I know when we did Ratcatcher, we didn't give away a lot of the spoilers.
Big twist in that.
There's a big twist at the end. And this is all stuff that happens in issue 1 that we're talking about now. In fact, I think at the time, Andy Diggle thanks us on Twitter for not giving away the spoiler at the end of that. So, but that said, I think that character does leave too soon at the start. Well, not too soon. I mean, he leaves at an appropriate point for the story, but I think for our emotional attachment to the
I think it's actually early issue 2 that it actually happens.
I think it might even be the final panels of issue
or something like that. But there's a big gap in between where he's not there. And so, yes. And the way he talks about his wife and making placards and all, and you go, I want to know more about this.
He's a wonderful crafted character. And I think this is more about Andy Diggle's idea of writing what's in front of you. Mm. And for us as the reader, what's in front of us is other comic book readers. Because when we go to pick up this comic, we go into the store. And I love, actually, one of the lines that resonated with me, and it's just something I'm familiar with, is him going in and saying, hey, I'm here to pick up my comics. So things that, no, they're not in yet because we had the long weekend. We had that public holiday. So the shipping's all pushed back. He's got, oh, bummer. It's like, I know that. Like, if you go in on the Thursday here in Australia, which is when our new comic day, and they think, no, it's not on shelf yet because we've been pushed back because of the public holiday. And they go, oh.
Yeah.
Bugger. So little things like that, that's what's right in front of us. You know, the whole idea of it being a comic store clerk or clerk. Because it's something that we are all, unless we're getting these exclusively digitally, it's something we're all familiar with, something we all know. So it is our wrong man story. We could very easily get caught up.
And everything about that comic book shop, about those characters, it is so well defined. It is, you sit there and you look at it going, this is so well written. I believe these characters. I believe everything about this the first 20 pages, the first issue.
Oh, it completely sucks you in.
Completely sucks you in. Yeah. And I just went, oh, I'm in. I'm full on into this.
I think it's like, it's like, to keep the Hitchcockian theme, it's kind of like your everyman character.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of character that either Jimmy Stewart or Cary Grant or somebody like that would have played.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that you can kind of That sort of North by Northwest opening, where you kind of you can't but help but love Cary Grant's character in that, because he's
absolutely because he's funny as well.
He's funny. He's arguing with his mother. Yeah. He's got the
Emil.
Yeah. he's you know, they booze him up and no one believes him. You know,
Roger, feed the $2.
Best line.
I love that film. I love any comic book that's going to take me into that sort of territory.
And it does. And I think I think for the setup at least takes you in there and gets you well into that world. And this is an intriguing little world that Diggle set up here, because it's quite twisty, but not as twisty as something like Ratcatcher was, like a pretzel inside another pretzel that had been eaten, digested, and then made into another pretzel.
And I think Ratcatcher also benefited from being one straight read. And I think if we had had this in one straight read, it may have actually been, I think, because we're being broken. Reading it back to back, you're still
even reading it back to back. Had
broken
to pick up the next issue. Yeah.
That's right. And I think that being broken sort of hinders the story flow on something that is in this genre.
So I think it'd be interesting to read that in the trade paperback form when it comes out. I think that will be the way to read it, because this does read. He actually said as well, he planned to write it as a spec screenplay. He said he knew that there was a little chance of actually selling it, but he thought he'd make a decent writing sample. Then, of course, I made the classic mistake. I told Jock the story down at the pub, and he shot back with, "Mate, I'd love to draw that," which I think is, he's told that to Comic Book Resources. And I think that's, apart from being a great story, it does have that sense of being a screenplay. All the more reason why it would probably read better as a single piece, because it is written for a single format. A single story format.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like a film, and it feels like it's got this. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. But the problem is, we're having commercial breaks.
Yeah.
And those commercial breaks are kind of going, ha ha. It's like putting commercial breaks in Silence of the Lambs.
Well, the thing is, the thing with serialized comics. This is interesting, because I think increasingly, and this is where comics are going to end up. Increasingly, I read my comics in big batches. Mm-hmm. Even the monthly ones, I save up. 6 months
so
worth sometime,
just
have a run, and so I can binge on Green Lantern, or I can binge on Superman or whatever. But I also love reading things in hardcovers. I love reading things in trade paperback collections. And singles, I think the comic book readers are probably the most patient people in the world, because forget you having to wait, you know, between a week for another episode of television. We have to wait 30 days between every issue of our favorite stories every month, and some stories don't play out for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, so we're watching, can you imagine your favorite TV show, you're only getting one episode a month over the course of 5 years, getting your 12-episode series over the course of, what's the average TV show?
Well, no, you've got
to
break it down.
23. So it would take 2 years for us to get the equivalent of one season of television.
Well, I was saying, you've got to break it down even further, because one episode of television is actually about probably 3 or 4 comic books.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
It's broken down into only 20 pages.
That's right. So we are taking 3, 4, 5 years to get the equivalent content.
So if you think about this, putting it into that context, you look at Civil War, forget all the extra comics. Let's just talk the actual series itself. I think is 9 issues or 8 issues,
something like that.
So that's 8 issues. So that's 8 months to get through one story. And you sit there and you go, that's a long way to go, you know?
And look, you know, this is, we're kind of lucky, because I read something like, I guess you'd be the same, we'd have to easily read 30 monthly comics at this point. So, you know, the wait's not that hard, because I'm watching other TV shows effectively, but my favorite ones, you have to wait a month between. And to bring this back to Snapshot, you're right. When I was reading this as singles, I actually each time had to go back and read the previous one.
I was lucky in a sense, because I read all 4 back to back.
Yeah.
But still that whole breaking in between. But yeah, no, I don't know if I could have done it the way you did
it. But now that it's over, with other ones, I've just stopped. I stopped at issue 3 of Daredevil End of Days.
End of Days, yes.
Because I want to read the rest of the one hit. And I think that is something that we will do in upcoming weeks, because I have a feeling that finishes next week.
And the other one, and my example of that, so yours is that one, and mine is Fashion Beast by Alan Moore.
Yes.
I read it monthly.
I'm not even picking it up.
The first 4 months, and then I kind of just went, I actually don't remember what happened in the first issue now, because it's so convoluted and so odd that I'm losing the thread. And so now I've just been saving them up. I'm up to issue 8. I'll wait for the next 2 months, and then I'm going to read the whole thing again from the beginning.
And this says a lot about modern comics, actually, and how sophisticated they've gotten. You could back in the days of pulp comic books.
Yeah, my day.
Back in your day, David. You could have sort of like thin storylines because, you know, if you waited a month, it didn't matter because it was just pretty much you started again next month. And sometimes it was wash, rinse, repeat. Other times it was a brand new story starting every month. Another art that I think has lost, the single issue story. You know, everything's an arc now.
Yeah, whatever happened to what in television they call them bottle shows? Whatever happened to the single issue, we're done, you know?
Yeah, it's like it was a great thing I used to love with the X-Files. Like, you know, you had your conspiracy episodes, but then be the great monster of the week.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't happen anymore. But when they do come along, they're beautiful. Things like Scott Snyder's single issues that he always puts out at the end of an arc. And it usually involves...
it's your taking a breath moment.
Yeah, and it usually involves his favourite new character that he's introduced to that world. But, you know, and I think that's a wonderful art that's been lost because everything has to be an event, everything has to be an arc, everything has to go over. Bringing this back to Snapshot, the preferred format will be to read this as a four-issue miniseries because there is a lot to love in this. There is, as we said, that you can get suckered in completely to this world. You can enjoy the art to start with. The action sequences are amazing.
Oh, they're fantastic.
The action, I mean, Jock, I mean, the way Diggle's written them, but also the way Jock's rendered bike chase sequences and running across rooftops and... just car chases, you know.
Action's a tough one in comic books because you can very easily get muddled.
One of my favorite scenes, and there's a car chase sequence, and they skid off and they slam into the back of a police car in a diner, and it's just such a great sequence. And you can picture that.
It pushes the police car through the diner. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about comics is there's always been the illusion of movement. Your mind makes up what's happening in between the panels. The best comics are when you suddenly realize when you stop the end of the action sequence and you suddenly realize, wow, that didn't actually, I didn't watch that. I imagined half of that. And you get that with Snapshot. You get, you know, the action is so beautiful. Jock is so great at drawing big action sequences. And, you know, we saw that in Green Arrow Year One.
Yeah,
the two of them did together.
Very much
so. Another great miniseries which works better as a complete set. You know, so talking about this now, there's a lot I loved about this, but I think perhaps my memory of it is marred somewhat by a comment that you made before the show that I agree with, which is the ending feels a little muddled.
It's a little muddled. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm coming fresh off this too. I read this last night.
Mm. Right? I reread it last night.
And you sit there and you go, I'm with you all the way through to the last, oh God, no, it's probably about halfway through issue 3.
Mm.
Once we get to the camp and stuff like that, so once we get to the camp and so forth, sorry, just passing over comiXology. you won't know my number, will you?
No.
So once you get to the camp, it starts to, I think, unravel a little bit,
right?
Because things happen so fast that have been basically setting up over time. Now, before we go any further, though, we should mention that another great character in this who plays a part all the way up to there is the police officer, who the detective, what's his name? I forget what his name is. But he is so much like Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is interesting because he tends to throw those sorts of little things in there. There was the Morgan Freeman character in the Ratcatcher book as well.
So we've got him also investigating, trying to figure it out and so forth. But when we get to the camp, we suddenly meet the mother.
Mm-hmm.
But that's over in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that the killer is there again. But that's kind of resolved really fast too. And there's actually a line from one of the soldiers where he actually says, boy, he's losing his edge. And I kind of went... Yeah, because I kind of feel about the comic book.
You know? Yeah, look, you know, there is, by the end of issue 3, beginning of issue 4, I did feel as though I was running down. And I thought on initial read it was because the month had gone in between. But rereading it last night in one hit, I did feel that I was sort of running out of steam towards the end of the film.
And none of it was bad.
Towards the end of the film, towards the end of the comic.
Yeah, exactly. None of it was bad. It just felt not fleshed out.
It didn't feel fleshed out. I think that's what, as I said, that's probably my main criticism, is that there are bits that I would like to see more of, and I think I would like to see it fleshed out a bit more. The ending is a hell of a downer, which is something in the final issue, Diggle's back matter notes, he actually says, well, look, you know, downer of an ending, huh? But life's like that. You know, life doesn't offer you happy endings all the time, which is true, and I appreciate that was a...
But oddly, it is kind of a happy ending.
It is and it isn't.
But yeah, it is and it isn't, in the sense that, I mean, we don't. How much do we want to give away here? Spoilers and all, people. I mean,
our main
survived.
Character lives, yeah.
Yeah, he survives. It's just the circumstances that he is allowed to survive.
Right, yeah, and it is. There's not much of a life left for him after that. You know, he can't go back to a normal life.
No.
After this, I mean, not that you could, after this kind of
And the thumb gallery was quite gruesome.
The thumb gallery was very gruesome.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of thumbs in that gallery. A
lot of thumbs.
It's actually how I'm thinking now, after having read that comic, I'm going to display my thumbs at home.
I think so.
Because I've got them all in a box. Unsorted. Except for the special ones.
Special little thumb clips on there and the whole bit. It's awesome.
I had them, but I think displaying them like butterflies is a perfect way to do it. Yeah. So people, if you pinky fingers, actually. If you're...
Oh, it's pinkies, that's right. It's
pinky fingers.
So.
If you... that's just my problem. I've been collecting thumbs and not
pinkies.
Yeah,
pinky we should have been doing pinkies all this time.
Thumbs are
thumbs
slightly
are
bigger, less...
so they take more room.
And they're slightly less attractive to display. Well, pinky fingers can be quite delicate,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you get those ones that have the longer fingernail for like
the
snuff.
Nails,
you know. Tune in next week for Behind the Pinkies. that was another moment. That's a really great moment in the comic as well, and it's a great reveal. And so there's so much love at this, and I think, you know, 99% of people are going to love this comic on the same level that we did, which is, you know, good writing, good art. We're only let down slightly by the fact that we wanted more of it.
Exactly, and I think that's what it comes down to. It's not that it's a bad... In no way is it bad. It is just one of those things where you sit there and go, if they just had a few more pages, if they just had the ability to just flesh it out a little bit more, so we could have had a little bit more explanation to the ending. Because the ending, in particular the last two or three panels, are confusing.
I thought so too.
Yeah, and you're not quite sure what the offer is on the table.
I thought it was because I was rereading it at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
No, it's confusing. Because you sit there and you go, I think I get it. I think I understand this. I think that's why it's a real downer. But then the next page, he's just walking out in the park with the girl. And you sit there and go, wait, what did just happen? You know?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I actually think that that's something that's characteristic of the rest of the issues as well. But it's the ending where you really notice it. I think you do notice that there's like, it feels like there's a panel missing every now and then.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes you do have to go back and no, I didn't miss anything. That's all, you know.
No, it is there. And I think if you go through it in a lot of detail and you go through it very slowly, you can piece it all together. It all makes sense. Because, I mean, Diggle's a good writer. And there's...
Oh, of course he is.
And Jock's a great artist. And they're not going to leave anything out. I just don't think they gave themselves enough time.
No.
And so, as I said, another 20 pages on this thing, no problem, you know?
I'll be interested to see. Coming up from... Andy Diggle is another book called The Uncanny. It's coming out, I think, next month or July, possibly. And it's going to be another crime book, and he's doing it for Dynamite. So it'll be interesting to him sticking to that crime genre.
It's a good genre for him.
He's a master of it. He really, really is very strong in it. And he does superhero books quite well. And I love reading Andy Diggle's stuff, and it's just a shame that he didn't get to continue Superman.
Kind of love to know what was behind all that, but anyway,
yeah, I mean, look,
we'll never know.
Maybe one day we'll get him on the show, and we can ask him about it. Frankly,
Andy, we want you on the show. Come and talk to us. We won't be controversial.
If you're listening to the show, Andy, and you know, you listen to the Ratcatcher episode, apparently, so maybe there's a chance you could listen to this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
We would love to have you on. Hit us up on feedback@behindthepanels.net.
And if you want to come on, you could just come on to a normal show. We don't even have to do an interview.
That's true.
Come on, and we'll talk about somebody else's work.
pick a comic, and we can go through your favorite comic. There you go.
And that goes for all artists out there.
Yes. Anybody who's written or drawn anything and wants to come on the show and talk about something,
feel free. We'd love to have you.
We are non-exclusive.
Well.
Well, we don't... We don't allow aliens.
We don't allow the cat in here.
But the cat came in once, well, came in more than once, but only one time did the cat jump up in the middle of me giving a brilliant piece of oration.
At this point in time, our audience is going, what the hell are you guys rambling on about? No, we're not on drugs, people. I swear.
There was an actual cat in the studio.
There was an actual cat.
It's not just one of those, dude, is that a cat that's just wandering through, man?
I'm going to say to people that they should go read Snapshot. I think it is a good read.
I agree. I really enjoyed it, and I've got nothing but
And if you get it on Comixology right now, the first three issues are only $1.99.
Yeah.
So go for it.
It's super cheap. And look, I don't think at the time of recording, I don't think the trade paperback's been announced, but definitely preferred format to get it when it comes out. Yeah. So that's out through Image Comics. David, that is, again, looking and feeling like at the end of a show.
Almost. Do we have any feedback at all this week?
We don't have a lot of feedback this week.
That's okay, because what we will use this time for then is to sell stuff.
We will use this time to sell stuff, David. So have you got
I think I might have
our favorite girl. Actually, we do have one thing that I will mention.
Okay, well, we better ring the girl on.
But we'll play the music, because this gets me in the mood to talk about us. David, you know, if you've been listening to the show up to this point, you may indeed think that we're on drugs or crazy. But you know what's not crazy? Supporting the show.
Absolutely.
If you want to support the show, you can do so in a couple of simple ways. One, you can subscribe to us on iTunes at Behind the Panels. While you're there, you should leave a comment. You should leave a rating in iTunes. That helps us boost our rankings and get us into that whole new and noteworthy thing and boost us
whatever
up.
That magic iTunes mojo is that is makes that work.
And so we can start ranking up and winning awards and stuff like that. Another thing you can do is you can visit behindthepanels.net. Take a look around, read some of the content. We've got a lot of stuff up there. While you're there, click on a button, a special button.
A button.
A button, I say.
Do we have a button there?
We have a button there.
We have a button.
We have a... Who's got the button? You can click on this button that reads something along like merchandise. I don't look at our site. I don't know. But it's a link to our merchandise.
I don't have to read it.
I'm too busy writing to read. You can buy some t-shirts, you can buy some mugs, you can buy all sorts of crazy things on there, but mostly t-shirts and
now
mugs.
Little buttons as well and stickers.
Will be up there soon. We'll have those. They're great little things
as
well. In
fact, we'll even go so far as say at Supernova this year, if you hit us up while we're there.
And you come up to us and say, hey,
if you come up and say, I've read your diggle, I'll give you a button.
We'll give you a button. We will be at Supernova. I'll be at Oz Comic Con. And I'll also be at New York Comic Con if anybody in America is listening that's going to come along. And I will give you buttons if you come up and ask to shake my diggle.
Shake my diggle. That's even better. So the magic words are shake my diggle and we'll give you a button.
The other way, of course, you can support us is by heading to facebook.com/behindthepanels. And you can leave feedback there. You can catch up on all the latest news and so forth. Three very easy, simple ways to support the show. And absolutely, also tell your friends about it.
Most important thing is to listen and get involved. It's our community.
Look,
so
if you leave us an email at feedback@behindthepanels.net, if you write something on the Facebook page, we'll read it out on the show. We're not fussy.
Absolutely. Follow us on Twitter. Do any of these, any method you use to communicate, you generally find it.
Yes.
So, you know, we are on all these things. And if you have a Google Plus account somewhere. But
yeah, we do. If you go to the website, that's behindthepanels.net, you go to the contact section, all those ways of contacting us are there, including leaving a voicemail, which we can play on the show.
And we'd love to hear your voices. So get onto it, support the show, tell your friends. Make sure if you are coming to Supernova that you drop us a line so we know you're going to be there. Mm-hmm. And we'll try and like meet up.
Because we will be doing a little bit of video as well. So
lot of video, actually.
Yeah, probably a lot of video.
if you are a listener who's a cosplayer,
we'll definitely get
you on video. Because we're going to be interviewing them.
We're going to be doing a bit of a special around that as well. But that... Oh, finally, before we go, our search term of the week...
Oh, yeah, I love this. Okay,
We've given our search term of the week. Usually, it's something sexual. Last week, we were lucky. It was about crochet. this week, we're back to sex. It's Banning Buddies Porn Comic is the search term of the week that led people to behindthepanels.net.
I just want to know, How?
I don't think any of those words have appeared in anything I've written.
No, I just want... Well, Banning has.
Banning has, but I don't know about Buddy's porn comic.
No, but I want to know what Buddy's porn comic is. And can we review it for the show?
You crack me up, little buddy.
Okay, so I guess that leads us to what are we finishing the show with? We're going to go out with, because for lack of any kind of music that we can think of for this particular comic book, we thought Deborah Harry doing Call Me sounded good because it's about a phone.
That would be fantastic. Next week, come back and join us where we'll be talking about Marvels.
I can't wait for this.
This is a, I think it was a limited run. It was now
it's
released.
It's Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross.
Yes, beautiful Alex Ross. So this is, I think as you've put it beautifully, David, it's the equivalent to DC's Kingdom Come.
Yeah, so what they did for Kingdom Come, they're now doing for Marvel. What they did for DC with Kingdom Come, they're now doing for Marvel with Marvels. Basically, it is a retelling of key events in the Marvel Universe through the eyes of civilians. So I'm really looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it as well, for no other reason, because the artwork's going to be magnificent.
Alex Ross is so
I
good.
Love Alex Ross's art. Everyone loves Alex Ross's art. Very freely available. Go out and read it. We'll be coming back and talking about it all next week. Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.